good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. I'm Lou Caroli, your host, and it's good to be back. I made it back last week, and but I had to do 2 weeks in a row with repeats due to this little COVID-type bug. Actually, I did test positive for COVID. I'm not sure whether these little test kits you get at Walmart are all that dependable, but it said it was COVID, so I'll take its word for it. Wasn't real bad, but it's left a little bit of a lingering cough, so I'll have to ask you to excuse me if every once in a while I kind of try to stifle a little cough. Well, I'm going to begin today with a headline that appeared on Fox News on Sunday, October 19th, and the headline reads, Trump boards Air Force One quickly using small stairs due to, quote, increased security measures, unquote. That according to a White House official. And this is by Greg Werner, Lucas Y. Tomlinson at Fox News. Again, October 19th. President Donald Trump boarded Air Force One quickly using the small stairs due to, quote, increased security measures, unquote, at Palm Beach International Airport on Sunday, a White House official tells Fox News. The heightened measures at the airport followed the Secret Service discovering a suspected hunting stand Friday near the airport with a clear line of sight to Air Force One when Trump boards and departs the presidential plane. Fox News was the first to report the discovery of the potential sniper position. No individuals have been arrested. FBI Director Kash Patel said his agency is leading the investigation. Patel said the hunting stand has not yet been connected to any individual. And this is a quote. Prior to the president's return to West Palm Beach, United States Secret Service discovered what appeared to be an elevated hunting stand within sight line of the Air Force One landing zone, Mr. Patel told Fox News Digital. And he went on, no individuals were located at the scene. The FBI has since taken the investigatory lead, buying in resources to collect all evidence from the scene and deploying our cell phone analytics capabilities, unquote. And that was by Kash Patel, the FBI director. United States Secret Service Chief of Communications, Anthony Guglielmi, also confirmed that the organization is, quote, working closely, unquote, with the FBI, as well as law enforcement in Palm Beach County. Guglielmi said agents discovered the hunting stand during their advanced security preparations prior to Trump's arrival in Palm Beach. And Guglielmi told Fox News there was no impact to any movements and no individuals were present or involved at the location. And he went on, while we are not able to provide details about the specific items or their intent, this incident underscores the importance of our layered security measures. The investigation comes weeks after Ryan Ruth was found guilty of attempting to assassinate Trump on a Palm Beach golf course from a sniper's nest he set up in bushes along a fence line. And once again, that is a Fox News write-up. Trump boards Air Force One quickly, etc. And again, it appeared in Fox News Digital, October 19th. And a companion piece that gives a few other details appeared in WorldNet Daily on October 19th by Joe Kovacs. It was entitled, Suspicious. U.S. Secret Service discovers elevated hunting stand with direct line of sight to Trump's Air Force One exit. Again, the dateline is West Palm Beach, Florida. And there is a certain amount of overlap here, so I'll skip down a little bit. The stand was located on Thursday. I don't believe our other article mentioned that. And Kash Patel says it has not yet been connected to any specific individual. And jumping down a little bit so we don't just repeat the same thing we heard before. Secret Service is working closely with the FBI as well as with Palm Beach County law enforcement. Anthony Guglielmi, Chief of Communications for the Secret Service, said agents came upon the hunting stand during advanced security preparations. A law enforcement source told Fox News Digital that the stand appeared to have been set up months ago. And that's in quotes, the words months ago. And they also mentioned about Ryan Ruth being found guilty of trying to assassinate Trump. And that, again, was from a sniper's nest as Trump was playing golf in that very town of West Palm Beach. And, of course, we all know he was struck in the ear on July 13th, 2024, in Butler, Pennsylvania. That is the president. And here are a few reactions to the suspicious stand. They don't say who said this, just some quotes. But one quote says, whoever set that stand up isn't hunting deer that close to the airport. The planes would scare the deer off. That stand was set up for one reason, to take out Trump. Needs to be fingerprinted and traced to where it was purchased. And I certainly hope that the FBI will do that. Here's another quote. That's not just suspicious, that's terrifying. Security isn't a luxury, it's survival when it comes to a president. Hope the agency stays sharp and prevent anything before it even begins, unquote. And a third quote, protect POTUS at all costs. They're never going to stop trying, and we're not even a year into his second term. That is the president. So that was from WorldNet Daily. The brief version of the headline was suspicious. U.S. Secret Service discovers elevated hunting stand. And it was by Joe Kovacs, October 19th, 2025. I will switch gears a little bit. Hillary Clinton has to get her 2 cents worth in. This appeared on Fox News on September 30th by Rachel Del Guidice, I guess is how you say her name, G-U-I-D-I-C-E. And the headline says, Hillary Clinton rips white men of, quote, a certain religion, unquote. That quote sparks backlash from conservatives. During a recent appearance on MSNBC, and I'll interject, no wonder that's the way she said it, since they are far left. But let me begin again. During a recent appearance on MSNBC, former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton criticized, quote, white men of a certain religion, unquote, and said they are doing damage to the country. And she said last week on MSNBC's Morning Joe show, quote, the idea that you could turn the clock back and try to recreate a world that never was, dominated by, you know, let's say it, white men of a certain persuasion, a certain religion, a certain point of view, a certain ideology, that's just doing such damage to what we should be aiming for, unquote. Some religious conservatives took Clinton's comment as a dog whistle about them. Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, told Fox News Digital in an interview Friday that America is rejecting the ideology that Clinton is defending. Perkins said, quote, she seems to be angry that the majority of Americans rejected the trajectory that the left had America on. And it's not just white men of a particular persuasion, and I'm not even sure what she means by that. Straight men? I'm not sure. But the reality is, America has rejected this leftist ideology that has totally decoupled itself from truth, unquote. During her interview with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, Clinton said, quote, some people are actually scared about what's going on in our country. The idea of we the people, that all men and women are created equal, that seems to be in the crosshairs of those on the right who want to turn the clock back on the progress that has been made, writing out huge chunks of our history, slavery, suffrage, anything inconvenient, you know. Take it out of museums. Take it out of national parks, you know, unquote. Perkins, and again, that was Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, said he thinks Clinton wants an America that is antithetical to American values. Mr. Perkins said, quote, I mean, I guess she wants to continue to advance a, you know, an administration and ideology on the left that is killing unborn children, mutilating our children that do survive and are born, and indoctrinating them in our schools. I guess that's the trajectory she wants America to continue on. You know, the idea that there was never America in which there was normality, Perkins added. I mean, look, we've always had our challenges, but they're the ones that have been rewriting history. They've been doing it for 100 years, unquote. In the light of Clinton's remarks, Perkins said he was concerned Clinton would even respect or accept the vision of the founding fathers, that is to say, whether she would. And Perkins said, quote, I guess if she wants to do away with the, you know, men, white men of a certain persuasion, I assume she wants to erase all the founding fathers who actually established the framework for which we work as a country that has given us the longest running, consistent constitution in country and history, unquote. In a statement to Fox News Digital, Roger Cerevino, vice president of domestic policy at the Heritage Foundation, said that Clinton's comments were out of touch. Cerevino went on, it's beyond tone deaf for Hillary to proclaim that conservative white Christian men are what's wrong with America while the nation mourns the loss of Charlie Kirk. At least it confirms what we all suspected, that Hillary still believes millions of Americans belong in her basket of deplorables based on their sex, race, and sincere religious beliefs, unquote. And Penny Nance, CEO and president of Concerned Women for America, told Fox News Digital in a statement that, quote, men of every race have allowed the left to marginalize and feminize them. America needs more strong men in this nation, not fewer. And she went on, the over 500,000 women of Concerned Women for America are incredibly thankful for strong men, and we dispute the false notion of toxic masculinity. And Nance added, what has been labeled by the left as masculine is the opposite of masculine. Real masculinity protects the weak and leads with courage and character. We are thankful for men like the recent heroes who literally took bullets for women and children in the recent shootings. We are grateful for the men who run towards danger, such as our first responders and the U.S. military. And Penny Nance went on to say that women are begging for men to be strong husbands, fathers, and providers, and that will lead to a strong nation. Once again, that was from Fox News. Hillary Clinton rips white men of a certain religion, and that sparks backlash from conservatives. That appeared on September 30th, 2025. And look, this is a good time just to mention, if you would like to contact me, we can always be very happy to receive your letters. You don't have to make any contributions. We'd be very happy if you did, but you don't have to. I'd be very pleased just to get letters from people telling us what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. I know my late wife, Elizabeth, felt the same way. She loved to get letters from the listeners, and they didn't have to have any money involved. Just the fact that they were listening and took time to write was enough. So if you'd like to write to me, just write to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Once again, Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And you can go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. And we have some essays there. I haven't updated them lately. Shame on me. I've got to put some new ones in. But the old ones are still very relevant, and I think you'll enjoy them if you take time to look. You can also find out all the different ways you can listen to the program. And obviously, if you're listening now, you've discovered at least one way And the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, will give you some other options. Now, you may have seen this on the TV or heard about it on the radio over the last few days. This particular version is from the Washington Times. Thieves strike Louvre in brazen jewel heist as the world's most visited museum shuts down. This is by Thomas Adamson from the Associated Press, Sunday, October 19th. Dateline, Paris, France. In a brazen 7-minute strike, thieves used a basket lift to reach the Louvre on Sunday morning, and as tourists were already inside, forced a window, smashed display cases, and fled with jewels of, quote, inestimable value, unquote. France's interior minister said the world's most visited museum closed for the day as police sealed gates and ushered visitors out during the investigation. Here we have a quote from Culture Minister Rashida Dahi, the ATI, that she posted on X, quote, a robbery took place this morning at the opening of the Louvre Museum. And that's the end of the quote. The museum cited exceptional reasons for the closure. No injuries were reported. Around 9:30 a.m., several intruders forced open a window, stole jewels from vitrines, and escaped on two-wheelers, according to the Interior Ministry. That's a word I had never heard before in all my years. Vitrines, V-I-T-R-I-N-E-S. So I looked it up, and it's glass display cases or valuables. That certainly does fit. And the Interior Ministry said forensic work is underway and a precise inventory of the stolen objects is being compiled, adding that the items have inestimable historical value. Dahi and Nunez. Now, I looked and it doesn't say who Nunez was until a couple paragraphs later, so I'll get to that in a minute. But Dahi and Nunez were on site with museum leadership. Video from the scene showed confused tourists being ushered out of the glass pyramid and surrounding courtyards as officers shut the iron gates and closed nearby streets along the Seine. Interior Ministry, Laurent Nunez called it a major robbery, saying the intruders entered from the outside using a basket lift. He said on France Inter Radio that the heist took 7 minutes and the thieves used a disc cutter to slice through the panes, that is, the panes of glass. He said it was, quote, manifestly a team that had done scouting, unquote. The heist occurred in the Galerie d'Apollon, and if you'll pardon, it's been a long time since I took French, and I was never much good at it. But it's Galerie, that much I can tell, D'Apollon. I guess it comes from the Greek god Apollo. And that is a vaulted hall in the D-E-N-O-N, Denon, I guess it is, wing, that displays part of the French crown jewels beneath a ceiling painted by King Louis the Fourth, make that Louis the XIV court artist, according to the ministry. French Daily, or Parisien, reported the thieves entered via the Seine-facing facade, where construction is underway, and used a freight elevator to reach the gallery. After breaking windows, they reportedly took 9 pieces from the jewelry collection of Napoleon and the Empress. One stolen jewel was later found outside the museum, the paper reported, adding that the item was believed to be Empress Eugenie's crown, and that it had been broken. Security around Marquis Works remains tight. The Mona Lisa is protected by bulletproof glass and a custom high-tech display system as part of a broader anti-theft measures across the museum. Let me jump down a little bit here. It wasn't immediately clear whether staffing levels played any role in Sunday's theft. In January, President Emmanuel Macron announced a decade-long quote, Louvre New Renaissance, unquote, plan, roughly 700 billion euros, which is about 816 million U.S. dollars. That's devoted to modernizing the infrastructure, ease crowding, and give the Leonardo da Vinci masterpiece its own dedicated gallery by the year 2031. But workers say relief has been slow to reach the floor. The theft, less than half an hour after the doors opened, echoes other recent European museum raids. And here are a few of those. In 2019, thieves smashed vitrines, again glass cases, in Dresden's Green Vault in Germany, carried off a diamond-studded royal jewels worth hundreds of millions of euros. In 2017, burglars at Berlin's Bode Museum stole a 220-pound solid gold coin. In 2010, a lone intruder slipped into Paris's Museum of Modern Art and escaped with five paintings, including a Picasso. The Louvre has a long history of thefts and attempted robberies. The most famous came in the year 1911, when the Mona Lisa vanished from its frame, stolen by Vincenzo Perugia, a former worker who hid inside the museum and walked out with the painting under his coat. This was Lou speaking. I guess the painting is not as big as I thought it was. If you could fit it under a coat. Never really stopped to think about that. You always see these close-ups and photographs of the famous painting that don't really give you a good idea how big it is or how small. But going on, it was recovered 2 years later in Florence, Italy. An episode that helped make Leonardo da Vinci's portrait the world's best-known artwork. Home to more than 33,000 works spanning antiquities, sculpture, and painting from Mesopotamia, Egypt, and the classical world, right up to European masters, Louvre's star attractions include the Mona Lisa, the Venus de Milo, and the Winged Victory of Samothrace, the latter two being sculptures. The museum can draw up to 30,000 visitors a day. That certainly is impressive. There's one more article on that theft, and I'll just give you a couple of the highlights. From the New York Post, October 20th, this was a very good article because it has actual pictures, color pictures of the items that were stolen. This was by Patrick Riley, again, October 20th. They have a theory here. The headline of the New York Post says, daring Louvre heist could have been commissioned by a collector, officials say. The crew of chainsaw-wielding thieves who brazenly robbed the Louvre of priceless jewels in the highest-profile museum theft in living memory may have been hired, officials say. Paris prosecutor Laurie Bacow said authorities are investigating whether the heist was commissioned by a collector. And here's a quote from her. We're looking at the hypothesis of organized crime, she told BFM-TV, adding that it could be professionals working on spec for a buyer. Video shows one of the suspected Louvre jewel thieves brazenly coming through a glass case using a mini chainsaw before making off with the Louvre during Sunday's heist at the Paris Art Gallery. Just read a little bit more here. If a collector was behind Sunday's daring raid, there is at least a good chance that the stolen pieces would still be in a good state once they're tracked down and retrieved, the cow said. The jewels could also be used to launder profits from other criminal enterprises, according to the prosecutor. And she said, nowadays, anything can be linked to drug trafficking, given the significant sums of money obtained from drug trafficking. Investigators were keeping all leads open, but fraud interference has been largely ruled out in this case, Bacow insisted. Well, that's a good stopping point for that. I don't think it's anything too much, but there's some very nice pictures there of the items, including, let me see. One of them was emerald necklace and earrings belonging to Marie Louise, Napoleon Bonaparte's second wife. Another that looks like a crown was actually a tiara belonging to Empress Eugenie, wife of Napoleon III. And then it shows some others. As it said, there were nine objects which were pocketed by the criminals, eight of which were actually stolen. The thieves lost the ninth one. The crown of Napoleon III's wife, Empress Eugenie. Eugenie, I guess.
Are you safe?
During their escape. It's worth several tens of millions of euros. That's a quote. Just this crown. And it's not, in my opinion, the most important item.
Auction House President Alexander
Ciacallo told Reuters. Again, you can see some good pictures. That is the New York Post, dated October 20th, 2025. And the headline reads, Daring Louvre Heist Could Have Been Commissioned by a Collector. All right, what else do we have? Back to President Trump. This is a little startling. From the Gateway Pundit. This was on October 20th, 2025, by Kristen Taylor. The headline reads, Take Out Trump. That's in quotes. And it's attributed to the Colombian president. Petro makes shocking threat against President Trump in Univision interview. Colombian president Gustavo Petro threatened to take out President Donald Trump in a lengthy interview with Univision on Monday, a day after Trump called Petro and, quote, illegal drug leader, unquote. Relations between Colombia and the United States are at a nadir after the U.S. destroyed a suspected drug-running boat in the Caribbean last month, killing a Colombian national. Petro said the man was a fisherman. A report by El País says the man had a criminal record involving the theft of hundreds of weapons from a police station in 2015. So we have a little difference of opinion there. Colombia recalled its ambassadors to the U.S. on Monday for consultations. Last month, the State Department revoked Petro's visa. Now this, again, this is the Colombian president of that South American nation. So the State Department revoked Petro's visa during the UN General Assembly after he spoke at a pro-Palestinian rally in New York City and called on U.S. troops to disobey orders by Trump. Speaking with Univision, President Daniel Coronel, at the end of the interview at Casa de Narino in Bogota, Petro said if Trump won't change, the solution is to, quote, take out Trump, unquote, loudly snapping his fingers. And Petro says, humanity is a first offering, and it is to change Trump in various ways. The easiest way may be through Trump himself. The easiest. If not, take out Trump. And it gives a translation. I presume this is in Spanish, since it's in South America. And then they have a note after that Spanish version of his words. Both X and Google translate the comment as take out Trump. The MRC, and I'm not sure what that's short for, but the MRC translation is get rid of Trump. Well, not so very different. Reading on. Coronel, now this is, I believe, the person doing the interview. Yes, Univision President Daniel Coronel was shaken by the interview, posting afterward via translation, I'm leaving more worried than when I arrived. President Gustavo Petro of Colombia is an illegal drug leader. Now, these, I think, are the words of Donald Trump talking about the Colombian president. So let me begin that again. President Gustavo Petro of Colombia is an illegal drug leader, strongly encouraging the massive production of drugs in big and small fields all over Colombia. It has become the biggest business in Colombia, by far. And Petro does nothing to stop it, despite large-scale payments and subsidies from the USA that are nothing more than a long-term ripoff of America. As of today, these payments or any other form of payment or subsidies will no longer be made to Colombia. The purpose of this drug production is the sale of massive amounts of product into the United States, causing death, destruction, and havoc. Petro, a low-rated and very unpopular leader with a fresh mouth to America, better close up these killing fields immediately, or the United States will close them up for him, and it won't be done nicely. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Signed, President Donald J. Trump. Now, back to the article itself. Colombia has recalled its ambassador to Washington amid a furious war of words between the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, and Donald Trump over deadly U.S. strikes on boats in the Caribbean. The row took a sharp turn this weekend when Petro accused the U.S. of, quote, murdering, unquote, a Colombian fisherman in an attack on a vessel in its territorial waters. Petro and his administration said the mid-September strike was a, quote, direct threat to national sovereignty, unquote, and that the victim was a, quote, lifelong fisherman and a humble human being, unquote. In response, Trump, who has claimed such attacks are designed to stop drug smuggling to the U.S., called Petro an illegal drug dealer and vowed to end aid payments to Colombia, one of the largest recipients of U.S. counter-narcotics assistance. He also ordered Petro to close up, that's in quotes, close up drug cultivation sites, saying if not, the United States will close them up for him, and it won't be done nicely. Speaking aboard Air Force One, Trump added that he would announce new tariffs on Colombian goods. Relations soured at the start of Trump's second term. Days after Trump's inauguration, Colombia initially refused to accept military flights carrying deportees, prompting the U.S. president to threaten tariffs and sanctions. Months later, Washington revoked Petro's visa after he urged U.S. soldiers to disobey Trump at a pro-Palestinian rally in New York City, telling them, quote, disobey the orders of Trump. Obey the orders of humanity. And I'm going to skip down a little bit now to a couple of other important things. As we said earlier, the Colombian president identified the man that on that boat that was hit as a fisherman, not a drug trafficker. However, the media outlet El Tiempo learned that Alejandro Andres Carranza, better known as Carancoro, was allegedly involved in the theft of 264 weapons from the Santa Marta Metropolitan Police. The incident reportedly occurred almost a decade ago, between March and September of 2015, when the prosecutor's office uncovered what appeared to be an illegal operation within the police force itself. The scandal was enormous due to the large number of firearms seized from illegal groups that disappeared from the SIJIN's evidence warehouse. And it later says that that stands for the National Investigation Unit. All right. And at the time, it says seven people were arrested, including Major Rolando Pinzon Garcia, who was serving as head of that National Investigation Unit at the time, five uniformed officers of various ranks, and one civilian, Alejandro Andres Carranza Medina, alias Carancoro. And Carancoro was the only civilian who pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit a crime, embezzlement by appropriation, falsification of a document, and aggravated theft in connection with a weapons incident. And again, this very same man who was the civilian who was arrested almost 10 years later was the one on the boat that the president of Colombia said was just a fisherman. That once again appeared in the Gateway Pundit. Take out Trump, Colombian president. Petro makes shocking threat against President Trump on October 20th, 2025. And if you watched any of the press conferences, or at least many of the press conferences, when Joe Biden was president, you undoubtedly saw it the latter part of his time in office, Karine Jean-Pierre as the press secretary. And now she's got a new book out, like a lot of books coming out now. Karine Jean-Pierre tries to claim she never saw signs of Biden's mental decline. Actually, this is a video, but they do give a summary, so I'll have to be satisfied with the summary. But if you go to the website, again, the Gateway Pundit is the source. This is by Michael Achance, October 20th. So I'll just kind of sum up what they have here in the text. Joe Biden's former White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, appeared on CBS Mornings Today to promote her new book. And I think I read that wrong. The title of the program is CBS Mornings. And she appeared today, as of the writing of this, October 20th. She faced some tough questions, especially about her knowledge of Biden's mental decline, which she claimed not to see. Even the liberal media hosts seemed skeptical about her claims. The fact that she wrote this book right after Democrats lost the election of 2024 made it look like she was rushing to get ahead of the story and set the narrative herself, basically rewriting history. And here we have a transcript provided by Real Clear Politics of a portion of this interview. Tony DeCouple, I guess that's how you say it. I've never watched this, so I'm not quite sure. Anyway, the CBS Mornings host said to Jean-Pierre, "It was the only person who was also clearly having problems." Right. I mean, lots and lots and lots of people who just watched him on video, let alone meeting him, had reported on that. Have you reflected on why there's this big disconnect between the millions of Americans at home who are watching him and said, "I don't know if he's all there"? Are you saying behind the scenes, "Wow, he was there"? Now, this is Karine Jean-Pierre's response to that question. So, a couple of things. We were always honest. You couldn't hide the fact that he was aging. Right. And we saw that there were moments where it showed that he was a no one. Now, this is a little odd here. I'm not quite sure this reads correctly, but it's what it says. That he was a no one, is no one's denying that. And he would poke fun at it, at that. And again, this is still Karine Jean-Pierre talking. And he said it was a horrible debate, terrible debate. He has spoken about it. I have spoken about it at the podium. I said this to you at the 8 o'clock hour, to you and the other anchors. And this question, I take it very seriously when you talk about his mental acuity. We talk about him being all there. He's someone that I saw almost every day, if not every day, and traveled with more than 95% of the time on Marine One and Air Force One. He was someone who would debate with you, engage with you. And the commentator writing this article says, "The worst thing about this for Jean-Pierre is that these questions are going to dog her for years to come. They call her basic integrity into question. Who is going to trust her to work on a campaign or be a spokesperson?" So again, that's a short summary of a much longer video that you can watch if you go to the Gateway Pundit, October 20th. The title is Karine Jean-Pierre Tries to Claim She Never Saw Signs of Biden's Mental Decline. Well, now we'll go to LifeSite News. The title, Pro-Antifa Professor Arrested for Bringing Loaded Gun to ICE Protest. This is by Calvin Freeberger, Friday, October 17th, 2025. Again, LifeSite News. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, announced the arrest of a Chicago professor for bringing a loaded weapon and extra ammunition to a protest against immigration enforcement. According to the press release, Elias Cepeda was arrested September 26th outside the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement's Broadview facility for bringing with him a handgun and at least three extra rounds of ammunition. Zepeda has a history of social media posts openly praising the violent far-left organization Antifa, which the Trump administration has designated a domestic terrorist organization. And he's also, that is to say, Zepeda has also got a history of heated anti-ICE rhetoric, most alarmingly a claim that, quote, we all be morally justified in taking your, that is, the DHS, Nazi heads off with weed whackers, unquote. And now we have a quote from Assistant Secretary of DHS, Tricia McLaughlin. She said, Elias Zepeda has suspected ties to the domestic terrorist organization Antifa. He has a history of glorifying violence against and the killing of our brave law enforcement. Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin said, quote, violent individuals like Zepeda are putting the public and our law enforcement's lives in danger. Just 2 days after the horrific attack on ICE in Dallas, Zepeda brought a loaded gun and multiple magazines to our ICE Broadview facility. Thank God law enforcement intervened and arrested Zepeda before he could have potentially shot or killed anyone. Let this serve as a stark warning to any individual who wishes to do our law enforcement harm, or any Antifa terrorist, President Trump and Secretary Noem, that is Kristi Noem, will fight every day to protect and defend the men and women who keep our country safe from violent extremists and criminal illegal aliens alike. And that was the end of that quote. Campus Reform noted that Zepeda is still listed as a member of the English Department of Northeastern Illinois University, which is abbreviated NEIU. The conversation about the political left's and the political left's tolerance of violent tendencies has intensified ever since Charlie Kirk, head of campus outreach group Turning Point USA, was fatally shot on September 10th while speaking at an outdoor event at Utah Valley University. 2 days later, authorities apprehended and accused 22-year-old Tyler Robinson of the shooting and detailed how he was motivated by his view of Kirk's conservative views as, quote-unquote, hateful. And it goes on to talk about Robinson, but I think we all know pretty much about that. So we'll leave that article for now. That was from LifeSite News, October 17th. Pro-Antifa professor arrested for bringing a loaded gun to ICE protest. And now here's one that really strikes me as being absurd, being a former teacher. This appeared in the Washington Times. Why it was easy for an illegal immigrant to land top job in Des Moines public schools. This is by Stephen Dinan, I hope I'm saying his name right, D-I-N-A-N, Washington Times, Monday, September 29th, 2025. And you may have heard about this. I'll say a few things from my own point of view as a former teacher, retired teacher. But first, let's see what they say. The arrest of an illegal immigrant serving as the Des Moines, Iowa, superintendent of schools has exposed a broader problem in America's public education system. Few of them are using E-Verify, the federal government's tool to weed out people not authorized to work. Iowa has revoked the education license of Ian Andre Roberts, the Guyanese immigrant who is helming the state's largest school system, despite his defiance of a deportation order issued more than a year ago. Late Monday, the school board voted to put him on unpaid leave and said unless he proves his work status by Tuesday, he'll be fired. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested Mr. Roberts on Friday, moving to enforce a final deportation order an immigration judge issued last year. Authorities said Mr. Roberts fled in his Des Moines issued a vehicle, then abandoned it and ran before being tracked down. When officers later searched his vehicle, they found a handgun, which illegal immigrants are not allowed to possess, according to the law. ICE said the case should be a wake-up call to communities to better check their hires. And here's a quote. How this illegal alien was hired without work authorization, a final... Now, this doesn't read right. Let me just rephrase this a little bit. How this illegal alien was hired without work authorization, and when he had a final order of removal and a prior weapons charge, is beyond comprehension. And should alarm the parents of that school district, said Sam Olson, director of the ICE deportation field office that covers Des Moines. Now, let me stick my two cents worth in. I mean, I'll get back to the article in a minute. I worked for over 40 years as a teacher in the state of Maryland. Every job I got, whether public or private, you had to go through a background check. And this dates way back to 1972, so this is not new. You had to be fingerprinted, and you were not allowed to stay in the job if things didn't check out right. These were to protect students so that, chiefly, of course, so that those who had been convicted of felonies harming children would not get into the classroom, or at least not stay for long if they did get in. How this man could become not just a teacher, not just a principal, but the superintendent of the entire big city school system, with no background checked, obviously, is beyond me. And just producing a driver's license was never good enough, in my experience, to get a job, not in a school system, because after all, you're in contact with students constantly. So it's even more so of a duty of the authorities to check you out than it would be for a non-teaching job. So this is very, very strange in my opinion. I couldn't believe that a big city like Des Moines would be that lax and would just let anybody who said they had the credentials. Apparently he must have said he had a doctor's degree in education. He must have said that he was, you know, an American citizen. He must have given other verbal proof of his standing. And it says a driver's license. Well, a driver's license is no proof of anything. A driver's license doesn't prove you have a non-criminal background. This is incredible. Well, so let's get back to the article now. Jackie Norris, chair of the school board, said Mr. Roberts claimed to be a citizen. She said he presented a driver's license and social security card and filled out Homeland Security's I-9 form, the paper-based process for verifying someone is eligible to work. She said the school system had no reason to doubt his claims until last week. But experts said if the school system had used E-Verify, they could have blocked him and avoided the embarrassing black eye. But Rosemary Jenks, policy director at the Immigration Accountability Project, quote, every school district in the United States should be using E-Verify, if simply to protect the children they are responsible for. E-Verify is voluntary at the federal level, though some states make it mandatory for employers within their borders. A bill to add Iowa to that list cleared the state Senate last year, but did not make it through final passage. Oh, let's see now. Let me jump down a little bit. But Mr. Rock, now this is incredible too. Mr. Roberts worked as a principal in Baltimore and at Anacostia High School in the District of Columbia, neither of which was listed as a user of E-Verify, nor were St. Louis and Oakland, California, where he was a senior administrator. Incredible. Just incredible. Well, I think I've said enough about that, but just can't believe it. Okay, enough. Now, we got just enough time for a few other things here. Let me pick one or two here. Here's something from the Washington Times a little while back, September 10th. European conservatives sound alarm over Brussels-led crackdown on quote-unquote disinformation. This is by Joseph Hammond, special to the Washington Times, Thursday, September 11, 2025. Conservatives and right-wing populists warn that a European Union initiative could become a state-controlled speech police. The proposed European Center for Democratic Resilience, championed by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, is being sold as a bulwark against Russian influence campaigns. Ms. von der Leyen said during her State of the Union speech Tuesday, quote, "We will set up a new European Center for Democratic Resilience." Her declaration was instantly met with jeers and hisses from conservatives and populist members in the audience. And here's a quote, "You are obviously fearing this new center," the 66-year-old German said as she paused for the decorum to return to the chamber. But disinformation is, quote, "so dangerous for our democracy because informed citizens who can trust what they read and hear are essential to keep those in power accountable," unquote. She pledged that the next EU budget would include funding for the anti-disinformation effort and similar media initiatives, especially for those living in news deserts. That's a new little phrase, news deserts, which I presume, this is Lou speaking, means places where you don't get much news. Our time is running short, so let me jump down. Says Ms. von der Leyen's plan is part of the broader European Democracy Shield strategy, which calls for an all-of-society approach to battling disinformation. Yet in the many European nations that still bear the scars of communist and fascist censorship, such language can be alarming. Here's a quote, "Countering foreign disinformation must never become a pretext to muzzle those who disagree," said Vijay Monani, Deputy Secretary General of the populist right Europe of Sovereign Nations group. And he went on to say Europe should defend open debate and not create a ministry of truth, unquote. He noted that the fight against disinformation or foreign interference is often used as a pretext to restrict debate, limit free expression, and silence the voices of dissent and opposition. He also made clear that the Europe of Sovereign Nations supports robust action against foreign interference and criminal information operations. Well, let me jump down a little bit now. NetzDG, N-E-T-Z, capital D, capital G, a law enacted in Germany in 2017 to combat disinformation, continues to be a political football. The law mandated that platforms remove hateful content, in some cases within 24 hours of face legal action. In 2021, Google filed a lawsuit against the law. The AFD has said such efforts over-moderate content to its disadvantage. And they talk about some actions in Spain as well. But our time is running out. So, it says conservatives in Europe cheered in February when Vice President J.D. Vance criticized Germany's attempts to limit hate speech. Imposing such limits to curb extremism and incitement has led to authorities policing the internet. Mr. Vance told a conservative gathering, quote, "There are thousands upon thousands of American troops in Germany today. Do you think that the American taxpayer is going to stand for that if you get thrown in jail in Germany for posting a mean tweet? Of course not. They're not going to stand for it," unquote. At a speech at the Munich Security Conference earlier in February, Mr. Vance lectured European leaders about the state of democracy and free speech across the continent. Multiple European leaders, including then-German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, rebuked his comments. And Mr. Vance said later, obviously, we're going to continue to have important alliances with Europe. But I really do think the strength of those alliances is going to depend on whether we take our societies in the right direction, unquote. So that's an interesting thing. And we can all look back, even if we weren't alive at the time, to what happened in Germany in the Nazi era, Russia in the Soviet Union communist era, with the so-called ministries of popular enlightenment, Dr. Goebbels. Once you give the government that kind of control, any kind of freedom is bound to go down the drain. Well, we have a few other things that we'll have to save for next week. The head of ICE, Tom Holman, hits back at political rhetoric and media spin for imperiling officers and Americans. He says ICE doesn't arrest victims or U.S. citizens. That just won't happen. And as many have said on the radio, if people don't want ICE arresting illegal alien criminals, they need to talk to Congress about that. ICE is just doing its job. Then in Fox News, we have massive telecom bust in major city is wake-up call as foreign adversaries threaten U.S. security. That was in Newark. It was New York City they're talking about. Well, our time has run out for today. Went by pretty fast. Write to me, Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. I'd love to hear from you. You can tell me I did great. You can tell me I did a lousy job. But I'd like to hear what you think. Again, Lou Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in again next week.